For June the 26th, 2020, we talk about The Last of Us Part 2. Hi, Greta. The haunted PS1 press event. And we ask you about your favorite bad or goofy AI in games. Welcome to Level 334. Oh, come on, Greta. Come on. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you taking the time and tuning in. I want to remind everybody, if you're listening to this episode when it comes out, Duckfest 2, Duckfest 2020, Duckfest Enter the Combi Realm is happening this weekend. So if you want to tune in and watch us do some live stuff, The Level is going to be on Saturday night at 6 p.m. Eastern, if you're curious.
Prime time.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing some video. We're going to be talking about, I'll keep it a surprise. But yeah, I mean, that segues into me, in general catching up stuff. I'm just stressed out about getting stuff ready for Duckfest. Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's understandable.
Yeah. It's not as stressful as like traveling and stuff, you know. If I had to travel right now, it would be a lot. But yeah, that in addition to a whole bunch of other just real involved things we're doing for some other shows. You know, I will never say my job is hard, but right now there is a lot of it, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's all that I've got.
The good news is we have the absolute best listeners in the world, and people are so laid back. People are so excited just to hang out together that,
yeah.
You know, some of the details wind up sliding like they always do. it's still going to be an amazing time.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it. Once we're in the middle of it and once things are going, the stress is going to melt away because you are doing the thing as opposed to thinking about how the thing could go wrong.
yep.
That wasn't a joke, but
no, I'm recognizing truth. Like I know exactly that feeling and that moment where it kind of turns.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we'll see how it goes, but, if you're not able to watch it live, we're going to be bundling up the audio from those episodes and, selling them, as part of Duck Bundle in order to raise money for charity. We're still trying to get that hammered down exactly which one it's going to be, but our, cause is, racial justice, this year. So yeah. Let's see. How's it going, Ben? What's up?
Wow. I don't know. I'm on the spot. Not much. I will say this much. Over the weekend, I spent more time in a virtual Seattle than actual Seattle.
Ooh.
that was an interesting experience, which I'll talk about later.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, for the video game you've been playing, I'm racking my mind trying to think of any, like what game is in Seattle, but yeah,
mm-hmm.
we'll learn in a few minutes. Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
If Cole gets it before he talks about it, I think he'll be the last of us.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. I didn't realize that took place that far west. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So you've just been head down on that.
Yeah. It is a long game, which, ooh. Yeah. Yeah. I took off work on Friday to play it as well. I was, oh, and also like, finished up a project recently, so I want a nice de-stressor of a day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's still meat on that bone. So
I was going to say, if you're looking to de-stress, I don't know if that game is the right thing to play. we'll get to that.
A different kind of stress is still, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. How about you, Dennis? What's going on?
Not much. I this weekend would have been Origins. So this past weekend would have been Origins Online, but it kind of imploded. But I had a bunch of demos scheduled that I kind of put out to the general public and just said, if anyone is still interested in coming and hanging out and trying Deck of Wonders via Tabletop Simulator, you're more than welcome. And people turned out. It meant I spent, God, more hours than not sitting right here and demoing the game. But the good news is it was a fantastic time, got great feedback, and people like seemed to really genuinely enjoy it. And that just felt good. So I'm excited. You should be see that. I know I talk about it pretty much every week, but you should see it ramping up even more in the near future. And yeah, it's just really fun to watch the thing that you spend so much time thinking about and working on yourself, especially because it's a solo game, to get to see it in someone else's hands and doing the thing that you hope it will do.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. Oh, and of course it was Father's Day.
Oh, right. Yeah. That, yeah.
Yeah. That whole deal. yeah. And that was awesome, but I'm burying the lead. And this is something you guys have known about for a while and that we put out on social media this weekend.
Oh, right.
But Jen and I don't think I've talked about this on air yet. Jen and I are expecting baby number 3 come December.
Fantastic. So, congratulations. Yeah. I said going, fantastic. Like that's the first time I heard it.
it's the first time you really heard it.
Well, you know,
it's exciting. It is, it's weird to think like we're being super duper cautious just because of COVID and interactions with pregnancy and everything like that. Yeah. But the recommendations on like staying pretty isolated, towards the end of the pregnancy and when baby is first born means that regardless of how things go out there, we're basically going to be in lockdown through June.
Like wow.
We'll be here.
Yeah.
And we'll be here with a cute as a button little nugget of a baby, which mm-hmm. will make it fun.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird just to, I'm thinking about this as I'm saying it, like there's almost a weird piece to it knowing that it's like, okay, things might get better out there. Things might get worse out there. Mm-hmm. The game plan for us is clearly lockdown.
Right.
That's not great, but it's also just one decision or thing to worry about that I've got off my mind.
Yeah.
It's odd. It's certainly not the version of peace I would have expected, but it's, mm-hmm. kind of the path ahead feels pretty clear.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Baby Furia 3 coming, and I'm sure you guys get updates about that as it happens. Mm-hmm. And the Kids Are All Right channel in Slack, which is a bunch of parents, has been super supportive and fun. And if anyone's listening and has kids and doesn't know about that channel yet, hop in. Mm-hmm. It's a good group of people.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of what would it look like if it wasn't supportive, like yeah, we're having another kid. How dare you?
Yeah, no. So we hit the channel limitation on Slack, so we had to combine the parenting channel with the zero population growth channel. I don't know why we actually have that because that's kind of not really a great. I don't really agree with that, but
better than Death Stranding channel.
Oh, geez.
Wait, I thought Death Stranding was like super pro baby.
It's super pro baby as utility item, I think.
Yeah.
which babies have a lot of utility.
Yeah,
they can eat, they can spit up, they can sleep, they can cry, they can
it's an alarm clock that you can't really program, it just goes off at random. Yeah.
It's training for sleep deprivation.
It's an alarm clock powered by, a neural network.
Oh, that's fantastic. But yeah, so lots to celebrate on the business front, lots to mm-hmm. celebrate on the family front, that's me.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
I want to also mention, we had like a fun mini game when you told us about this where we were trying to think of your next child's name.
Oh, yeah.
Your two children both have four-letter names that end in vowels, and they increment.
Are consecutive letters of the alphabet.
Yeah. I still want to maintain that it could start with an N or a K, depending upon how you want to continue the pattern.
Oh yeah, yeah. You could oscillate it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we are planning on having 26 children, so we'll get to all of them eventually.
Yeah.
No.
Oh. So how about you, David? Keep in mind that we do have to escalate things in size of announcements, so you've got a tough act to follow there.
Oh, well, that might be a problem. Honestly, not a whole lot going on. Did a martial arts class over the weekend, so that was kind of fun. Thing on short impact weapons, so things like pens and flashlights, things like that.
How long does a flashlight have to be before it stops being a short impact weapon? Because I've got a 4D cell maglite that I got not so much for utility, but because I like carrying it.
no, that's just an impact weapon. Like,
okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, this is more like the kubutons, like the keychains that people carry for self-defense, like things gotcha. Like that.
Okay.
Huh. Is there a keychain you can carry for self-defense that's kind of a nunchuck too? Because I would be down for that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I ordered this keychain multi-tool that I saw. I don't know if it was on some ad or whatever, and just because it seemed like a cool thing to have. And I got it, and it was like there's like a weird little part of this. There's like a little like indentation, and like there's a tube that goes through to the end. And I looked at it, and I looked at the packaging, and I was like, oh, that's a one hitter pipe. This is like it is a key shaped multi tool that goes on your key ring, that has like a little cutting edge on it and a little bottle opener. And, it had like just, it'll do like a screwdriver kind of stuff. But also, like, if you want to smoke a little bit of weed, you can just put it in there and then suck out the end of it. It's like, okay, weird.
The evolution of the multi-tool.
I all guess. The utility you need.
Yeah. High functionality. Yeah. woof. Yeah. So I don't know that I would use that as a weapon, but.
Now you could be charged for it as if you were carrying a weapon, but that's another discussion.
Maybe. Yeah. But yeah. So was this like a video class, David, or was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Nice. Well, I want to get on to talking about video games because we have a big, title, which is pretty fun. So we've got the usual kind of show for you. We got the grind, the multiplayer, and the unboss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I forget here, David, you weren't here last time, but I want to go to Ben because he has The Last of Us 2, because that's the new one. Are we okay breaking protocol? Do we have a majority vote on breaking protocol?
I second.
I might have to filibuster this.
Okay.
I advance the blue tag to the red square, overriding your filibuster.
Okay.
I'll abstain to not rock the boat, but we still have a 2-1 majority.
The boat was rocked last week, so I believe we need to continue the rockage to maintain that blue red square move.
Gotta keep flipping.
hey Ben, how's The Last of Us 2?
Oh, I've been playing Infamous 3. I don't know what you guys are talking about. No, I've been playing Last of Us 2. All right, yeah, so I will try and be very careful about talking about this game. I don't want to spoil anything. I'll give a little bit of information about like what's happening in like the first 8 hours or so in vague details, just to kind of broadcast to not ruin it for anyone. Anyway, okay. So it's really good. It's very much a Naughty Dog game. And so it kind of suffers from the same flaws that it typically has. Mm-hmm. And it has the same strengths that those games typically have.
Can you enumerate some of the flaws on that for people who might be unclear?
Yeah. So in this case, that's game specific for this one, is there's a lot of quests you have where it's there's like a lot of MacGuffins that you need to go to. It's a mm-hmm. little bit different in this one than in like an Uncharted game. The problem with this one is that the MacGuffins don't really point you to the next one to go to too often. A lot of times it's, hey, let's go and look for this. It's a dead end. You have to go back to your base. Like, hey, let's go for this instead. Oh, we couldn't find it. Let's go back to here instead. So kind of, at least in the first like 8 to 12 hours or so, it's kind of a little bit unsatisfying because you feel like you're not really progressing the story that much.
Yeah.
So a broad overview of the story. I don't want to say any details about this, but basically the thing I was surprised by is the story is more focused on Ellie. And the premise is that Ellie and her newfound girlfriend named Dina go on a mission to Seattle, Washington. And what I was surprised by is Joel, they just kind of like wrote him out of the story. Like he's just chilling in Wyoming, you know, and it focuses more on Ellie in this game. So that was interesting. One of the things that's like a little bit underwritten is you're introduced with the new character, Dina. And the premise is like they just started dating like kind of at the start of the game. But within like a week of their relationship, like she's like down to like leave the city that they're in and travel to Seattle and like fight alongside this person. So like that's a little bit like far-fetched at points or whatever, but that's like a very minor issue. So yeah, there's like a few things like that. The other thing that is like a constant problem with Naughty Dog games is they will periodically try and lecture you on you killing hundreds and hundreds of soldiers throughout the game. Even though they make you kill hundreds and hundreds of soldiers.
Yeah, no, they're just paying back. So they said, okay, everybody made fun of us for making Uncharted and having the happy-go-lucky good guy kill hundreds of people. Well, we're going to serve that back to you 100 times over.
I heard their next game is going to be you're a game dev who's making violent video games, and it's going to constantly shame you for being a game dev in the game making games that make you think about when you're killing people.
Mirrors up to mirrors. So
this was a similar problem in Uncharted 4, I think, where like the main crux was like the relationship between Nathan and his wife Elena. I can't remember her name, unfortunately.
Nailed it.
And like, you know, talking about like the stressors of their relationship, cut between them murdering people together, like casually and making jokes, you know, and it's like those two things like don't really jive well. And so you have a similar problem here where it's like, I think they do a better job in this game where the relationships or the emotional level they try and go for, it's like taken like more maturely or more seriously. But it still has that kind of like caveat where it's like, these are intercut with you murdering a bunch of people. That said, the art style is impeccable in this game. Like the sets are amazing. It's like that part's like completely flawless in my opinion. Like that's totally the bar that games should try and strive for. At the same time, it's like, man, you did so much work in this game. Like I would have been fine with a 10-hour game that was like tight story-wise, and like had like maybe half the content of what you're giving me right now. I would have been just as happy with that. Because at least right now in the first like half of the game, I think I'm about halfway through, the story beats are a little bit spaced out. You know what I mean? Like it's you go through and that's kind of like the wall that I'm running up against. It's just a lot of go to this area, kill four or five people, and then go to the next area, kill four or five people, like over and over and over again. That said, like any individual one of those experiences is really well done. It's like really well polished, really well laid out. It's great. But when you do that like 100 times in a row, it gets super monotonous. And like, I'm a little bit worn out of doing that over and over again.
Like so what you're describing almost sounds like a puzzle game, right? Like I'm going to solve this room and then I'm going to solve that room and then I'm going to solve that room. So is that the feel that you get when you're going through each of these individual encounters that there's kind of,
I would say it's like a bad puzzle game. Like if you're doing the same thing over and over again. Yeah. Because largely the combat doesn't evolve too much between the start of the game and like where I'm at now. I mean, you unlock new weapons, you unlock new abilities and stuff, and those do affect like the more minor details of the combat. But in general, let me praise some compliments upon the combat.
I wanted to get the kind of mass stuff out of the way because I know you like the game.
So the music is great. The stealth mechanic, this is basically like a Metal Gear Solid game now. Cool. You can go, this is, sorry, let me back up and give another high level detail. Naughty Dog's amazing at just adding like one or two small mechanics to each of their games that over the course of like the last 10 or 15 years, like they have like such a robust engine now. What I'm thinking of is like, for example, in like Uncharted 4, I think is where they added like the rope swinging mechanics and like the sliding on the ground mechanics, which are just seamless here. Like they're just used all over the place here. What they've added to this one, which I think people could probably see gifs online, is they've added like rope physics to the game.
Yeah. So lots of people are like posting detailed images of it. And it's very hard to like look at those conversations because just the discourse around the game is pretty thick and inescapable at this point. So, you know, like cool technical thing matched with, you know, also valid concerns about the working conditions of the people who made it. But it's like, it's, you know, all of it's kind of cross-contaminating a little bit, but cool ropes. cool ropes at the very least.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd be curious to know like where the crunch like happens at Naughty Dog, if it's like primarily on the artist side or if it's on the programmer side, because it seems like it's probably on the artist side, because it's like, you know, you don't have to do as much if you already have the engine set up or whatever from like one area to the next. Like you do have to do some work designing or whatever, but like all those art assets that are like completely bespoke for all these areas, like when I'm playing the game, I'm just like, man, that's like so much work. Yeah, it's just like for example, there's one scene in a hospital where it's like you open up this white bin and there's just a bunch of bespoke like hospital objects in this bin. And it's just like, man, that was like probably like 2 weeks worth of work for a person.
Yeah,
like,
and for one.
Like, yeah, and like half the people aren't even going to see that, you know, it's like, yeah. So, I on the one hand, it's very impressive that they have all this. On the other hand, it's like, you don't have to do this much. you could tighten it up and it would be fine.
Think about which hills you want to take.
So
is that a through line like in that, and then just overall for the game, is there a lack of editing to it?
I tried to think back of like what I would need to cut, and it's like even with each mission there are small details that they build, like with the backstory of like what's going on. Okay, and this is like another common thing is like found narrative is getting a little bit annoying after like 10 or 15 years of it. One example. Okay.
No, you were going to give an example and I was going to ask for an example. So.
Yeah. So one example is like you find the body of this person by like a generator who had like obviously like shocked themselves to death. And then like later you go and you see this journal of them talking. And the last entry is like, well, I'm going to go fix the generator again. It's like, why would you journal? Like, I'm going to walk off and do this. You know, like, and
so, well, I feel like that adds nothing to the story of the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something. Yeah. Once you have a diary of someone who's there, you know that that's the person. And you don't need to explicitly say it, you know? Yeah.
You know, or, you know, like all you have to do is put the two assets next to each other and the player puts the story together.
Yeah. I wonder how much of it is designing. Like, go ahead.
I was going to say, just that doesn't really, that's not really interesting. Like, I feel like, found narrative, stuff like that works when it adds something to the story. But like when it's like, hey, people still suck at fixing things and sometimes accidentally kill themselves. Like, that's not really news.
Yeah. Yep.
I think they also, to some extent, have to design for the least common denominator in terms of like, you know, who's the teen who didn't play The Last of Us 1, who, you know, doesn't really have a vocabulary around how this stuff is done in video games yet. Mm-hmm. And they want to blow their mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they do that'll. Oh, go ahead.
They do a great job of that too. Like, because you notice this every game they play, where it's like you have to re-tutorialize like how to play the game, you know. And so like the first missions, you're doing very little. Like, you're not doing any shooting or anything like that. It's just learning like walking around and stuff. And they do a great job of that. Like every game of like building those skills back up again slowly. Mm-hmm. Another new mechanic that they have in this game that kind of ties into the kind of contrivance of the found narrative is there's a lot of like safe puzzles, which are like kind of like, you know, like they'll have like big rewards in them, right, if you can find them. But then it has like the other convention where it's like, okay, well, this combination is going to be somewhere, either this room, a room next door to it, or like a room down the hall, and that's it. You know, it's like going to be one of the three options. And And by and large, that happens like 90% of the time. There are a few times where they kind of space it out, and they do a better job of like making it like more interesting puzzles. The best example of this is there is one open area in Seattle where it's like, it's similar to Uncharted Lost Legacy. And in that game, there's one like open area where it's like very open map. You can choose to do puzzles in different orders and they accommodate it. Like they have the dialogue, like dynamically scale based on where you are, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I remember talking about that before. They have like videos about this where it's like, they have completely different dialogue paths for which area you're in and how far advanced you are with the character you're talking to.
Okay.
Well, cool. And all the work to like have realistic like interrupts and segues back into conversations is fascinating.
Yeah.
I think that was Uncharted 4 that they really delved into that.
Okay. Yeah. I definitely noticed it in Lost Legacy, but maybe they did it even before that. Anyway, so there's one area where they do that, at least in this game so far, and that one's really rewarding because that there they can have things like in completely opposite ends, and you have to actually do work to figuring out, like, okay, so I have this key here, but where could I use it? You know, like, and trying to do like more complex thinking than just, okay, which of these two rooms is a combination in?
Yeah. So when you say you get big rewards off of doing the, you know, opening the safes, like,
yeah,
what do they reward you with? Like, what's the resource constraint game in this?
Yeah. So basically the three options are a new gun, which is sweet. Okay. A new system that they added, mm-hmm. which I like a whole bunch, is it's a booklet, like basically some sort of magazine you can unlock. And basically what the magazine does is it unlocks a new skill tree that you can advance your character in. So example, you might see like a hunting book, and so you read it, and then that opens up a new set of skills that you can do with like advancing your like bow and arrow skills.
Oh, nice.
So that's handled, I think, really well. And I think that's a really cool new mechanic. And I'm not sure how they handle it. I imagine what they do is they probably put these in saves so that if you miss one, they can just put it in the next one. So you're not actually like missing. Because I think in the first game they had something like that where they had like the five bench upgrades, and I'm pretty sure mm-hmm. if you missed them, like you just didn't get it. But anyway,
yeah, I could see it being like, okay, you get, you know, if you open the safe, you get access to the skill tree like 2 hours earlier, or a couple of areas earlier than you otherwise would.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then I forgot to mention the third thing that you could get in a safe too is like a additional slot for your weapon, which basically means you can quick select it on the menu, which is like, that's a cool enough upgrade system. I think that it's nice.
So what would a different weapon constitute? Because this doesn't seem like it would be like the Resident Evil thing where you end up with a pistol that can hold like 300 rounds or whatever.
It's similar to what the first one is. Like, there's a shotgun type, a rifle type, a pistol type, a bow and arrow, those sorts of things. And you gradually get them throughout the course of the game. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Is there much in the way of improvised weapons?
They have like the same crafting system as the first game. They've made like slight improvements to it. So you can craft things like smoke bombs or Molotov cocktails. They have a new like proximity type mine in this one.
Yeah.
And this kind of segues into the combat. The combat is very, 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 very satisfying. I think any individual one level is very, very satisfying.
Yeah.
Basically it's like the Rorschach from Watchmen, where it's like, you're not trapped in there with them. They're trapped in there with you. Cause you have like so many devices with how to handle people now. It makes it a lot of fun. So it's like, you can set traps like mines like that are pretty effective, and also do a good job of saying like, okay, they can't flank me now from this side, so I'm going to like stealth my way over this direction now.
Yeah.
And it's so satisfying when you hear like an explosion off in the distance and be like, all right, got that guy. And what else there? So if you can sneak up on someone, you can stealthily kill them with like, you know, knife shiv attack,
yeah.
which you can upgrade if you want to be even more of like a psychopath and watch throat slitting animations.
Jeez.
Yeah. The violence in this is like very raw though. And it's very not satisfying at times, in the sense that you feel bad about what you're doing. Like, yeah. Have you ever seen the movie The Jackal?
No, from 1990?
The scene where Bruce Willis shoots off Jack Black's arm and it's like very unsatisfying. It's similar to that. But it's like all the stories that we talked about leading up to this are present in the game. The characters have names. Mm-hmm. And so if someone dies, like people call them out by name, like, oh no, Colin.
That just sounds really like, funny to
oh,
me.
No.
I don't laugh when I hear it or anything, yeah. But I think it's like a nice touch. Mm-hmm. You can kill dogs in this game, which feels terrible. But dogs can kill you in this game, which is also isn't nice either. So.
Which also feels terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, they give you enough options. You can craft silencers in this game, which I don't think you could do before.
Well,
and it's like makeshift like 20-ounce bottles that are sticking on the end of your gun. You know? So it's like, it's, you know, yeah.
Yeah,
I want to see someone like try to do that. I know that just that really bothers me that is such a like trope of, you know, oh yeah, just, you know, stick a tin can or something on the end of your gun.
Yeah.
It looks like a silencer. It probably works like a silencer, right? but all this is leading to the point that they give you plenty of options to do things stealthily that actually work. It's not like a Hitman game where it's like you spend endless hours just in a single section and you have to do it flawlessly or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's not like that at all. Like a Metal Gear Solid game, there's tall grass all around. So there's plenty of ways that you can just sneak off into grass and they lose sight of you and you can kind of re-stealth the area.
Uh-huh.
So previewing the multiplayer, like how dumb is the AI in terms of forgetting you were there or deciding it was a rat or any of those tropes?
It varies. I mean, they don't ever are like, oh, I guess it was the wind after you've shot someone. They don't never ever say that or anything like that. So at least it's that competent. The only thing I've noticed that's like consistently a little bit off is if somebody is running in a direction that they've heard you in and they have like a melee weapon, it's not uncommon for them to miss you if you're like kind of like a little bit crouched. And I don't know how accurate that is. I mean, I guess that's fine if that's like a choice intentionally. But that's happened a couple of times where somebody's like run pretty close to right past me to the point where I just like melee them and kill them.
Have you seen that study about the mind's ability to miss really blatant stuff when it's focused on something else?
Yeah, like yeah, when it's specifically actually running to try and kill someone. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually a lot of how like camouflage and things like that really does work is, you know, learning what details the brain basically papers over.
Mm-hmm.
So like one of the big ones is, you know, brain tends to like group objects that are nearby together. So that's why, like, you know, for example, when most people walk past a tree line, they don't actually look between the trees, they just kind of effectively see it as one big wall.
I think it's specifically the one I'm thinking of is about just breaking eye level. Like you're so used to seeing humans at eye level that's very disorienting. So point taken, it might not be as far off reality as you might think.
I accept that.
It's a weird hill for me to die on. I'm kind of processing that there. But go ahead. So,
question.
Yeah.
It seemed like by far the coolest feature of the original game was the multiplayer. Is that still around?
I have not played it, and I don't know if they have it or not. I will check this after I beat the main storyline, I guess.
I think conspicuously it doesn't.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay. That's sad. Yeah, that was great.
Honestly, I don't blame them because they've done multiplayer in all of their games and they've like put like work that is like a legit multiplayer game in, but like nobody ever plays it because it's like it's overshadowed by the single player effort, you know?
Yeah. Let's see here. So I guess Naughty Dog is going to make a multiplayer mode, but it didn't ship with the game. So they're doing like a Metal Gear Online thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. Again, it's one of the things where it's like if that's like translates to people's like lives that they're spending working on it, and they can cut that to make just I'm fine with them cutting it. I enjoy their multiplayer, but it's like I don't think it's.
Wait, but let's be honest. This is America. What that really means is we're going to cut people.
Yeah, like fire people. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no scenario where a corporation is like, why don't we just, you know, cut profits and give people a better life?
Yeah. I'm going to steer away from this conversation and steer back to the game.
The last thought I'll offer is it probably actually would line up with how people play the game. Like, I doubt anyone jumps into multiplayer before they've finished the main campaign.
Yeah.
So it makes total sense that you've got like a month there where the majority of the player base is occupied not really thinking about multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a question about combat generally. So first game, it felt like it was like 60-40 fighting other people and fighting the infected, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I've not seen an awful lot of discussion about like, you know, everybody talks about fighting the dogs and fighting, you know, Derek and Jim. Sorry, Derek, Jim. No. Everybody talks about those, like, how is it fighting? Like, how, like, are the infected still there, or are they too far gone to be threats? Like, what's the deal with those?
Yeah, so you still fight infected. You still fight humans. I think the difference is humans. There's like basically two different factions of humans that you fight. And the tactics of the two are different, so you kind of have to play it differently.
Okay.
So there's like basically three main types of fights, and they kind of vary with how they introduce them in the game. So like I'm still ramping up on one of them.
See, I feel like, does the game really need the zombies anymore? That, I don't know, it just, it always struck me as weird that they were in the game, and it seems like even more so now that they've, you know, decide that this is going to be, you know, Spec Ops the line.
There is one thing that I thought was a little bit like lazy on the writing, where they basically have given up, like, because in the first game they tried to do like the thing where it's like, oh, it's like planet Earth, you know, it's like this is like the cordyceps or whatever, that's the actual thing, right? It's like that for humans, you know. With this one, there's this like really hokey brochure where it shows about like the different stages of like the infection or whatever. Mm-hmm. And each one's like random. And it's like, okay, this is just the five types of enemies you have. And you're like trying to say that these are stages that feed into one another. But that's not true at all. So it's like, for example, like stage two was like, this zombie tries to like hide and surprise its victims, you know, where the first one's like a mob. And it's like, what does that have to do with the progression at all? Like, why would... How is it a survival mechanism for a zombie?
It's kind of a cool idea if they actually implemented it, of like these are enemies that are evolving and progressing, and so if you leave one alone for too long, it'll evolve into something harder to take out.
If I think there was better writing and better structure around it, I think that could have been a cool point. Where it is now, it's just like, no, there's like five disparate enemies and they don't really have much to do with one another in terms of like what their tactics are. But I think the first game was more cohesive than this one is, because this one, like, I think there's like one of the enemies is like a mob of just like newly infected humans or whatever. And it's kind of like different tactics where it's like they're all very lightweight, but you have to deal with all of them. They're coming from different angles.
So I do feel like, to be fair, like, for example, like rabies, one of the symptoms is like hydrophobia, which is, you know, really, really random. So, I mean, I guess you could see, you know, justify some degree of those sorts of things.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think the idea of making a stage of someone like this type likes to scare you is kind of like lazy writing for, oh, we just have a mechanic where we're going to surprise you a bunch. Yeah.
See, all that stuff just reminds me of, you know, like hokey Resident Evil zombie write-ups, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like I'm actually down for it.
On board.
So the final stage of this zombie causes assailants to hallucinate different shapes before they're able to kill it. Diegetic quick time event.
Yep.
Ooh. We'll see if anyone has like a busted arm or like a giant spider monster at the end of it or something like that. But I don't think it'll go as far as Resident Evil does.
Yeah.
What else can I talk about? I think one thing the game lacks a little bit is there's not as many like surprises and like kind of events like there is in something like Uncharted 2. And I think that kind of ties to the point I was talking about earlier, where it gets a little bit monotonous, like in the first like 12 hours after a bit, where it's just strictly go to the next scene, sweep the room of all the humans, go to the next scene, that sort of thing. Do a puzzle and every now and then. But yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe as a final thought, like it's a really good game. It's really well made. It gets a little bit monotonous. And then the other part is there's definitely not as much of a iteration or creativity in this game compared to what the first Last of Us was, because that was like so different from Uncharted when it came out, you know, that I think this will suffer a little bit from that, where it's like, don't get me wrong, it's a very, very well made game. We'll see where the story goes. I know like some people, I've been seeing some posts of like people hating the story at some points. I haven't seen anything offensive about it yet. So I feel like there's probably like a controversial ending coming. I still don't know what it is. So I'm trying to finish the game before I get spoiled on that. But,
racing against the statute of limitations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a very well-made game, but I don't think, at least so far, I don't think this game will be as pivotal as the first game was, I guess. Yeah. So I hope that Naughty Dog makes a different type of game going forward. And please just make a smaller game. Like, your games are amazing. Like, just make a 10 or 15 hour game. I would be in love with that. This game looks like it's going to probably clock at like 20 to 40 hours, somewhere around there, I think.
How long to beat has it at 20? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, wasn't The Lost Legacy shorter?
Yeah, and it was great. Yeah,
I enjoyed that. What was the DLC for The Last of Us 2?
That one was short too. That was like maybe like a 3 or 4 hour experience, I think.
Yeah, they know how to do it. They mm-hmm. it can be done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, Naughty Dog is gonna go, like, they just announced Crash Bandicoot 4. However, that's not being developed by Naughty Dog. That's being developed by Toys for Bob. So,
okay.
Yeah.
How long does it have it as how long to beat for completionist run?
I went away from the page.
All right. Because and this is one other point that I kind of like am a little bit miffed with, like, Naughty Dog games as a whole, mm-hmm. is like, they, on the one hand, they have like really good scene to scene moments, you know, and they do a really good job of pulling you through to the next moment, like if you have like a character companion or something like that, or some sort of event kind of like pulls you forward. But then at the same time, the gameplay incentivizes you to stop and explore as much as possible, because that's where all the items are. And that's where like upgrades and stuff are. So it's like this weird tug of war where it's like, I want to follow your experience and just play the game and enjoy it, but I also need to get all these things so I don't run out of ammo and have a terrible time.
Yeah, no, you're giving me 3-4 bullets at a time, so I need to find more of them. For main plus extra, it says 24, and for completionist, they say 29. I don't know if that entails making choices and going back and playing it multiple times. No idea.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think I'm probably at like maybe 15 to 20 hour mark, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know that I have any more questions. It's been nice to hear you talk about the mechanics, because most of what I have seen, again, has been, you know, discourse and backlash or glowing praise primarily for the story and presentation. Actually knowing that, like, oh, this play, like, it's real snappy. Like, it's, you know, like a good shooter. It's a good stealth game. It has meaningful upgrades and stuff like that. That's kind of the thing that makes me curious and want to play it. So,
yeah, it's kind of interesting. There's an assumption behind all the conversation of like, yeah, of course it's an amazing game. And then there's either a but or an and kind of following onto that. But that first part is very much taken as given, because Naughty Dog.
Expectations are so high for the game. Yeah.
But that's the thing is, I think it, again, from what I've seen, on a gameplay sense, it largely lives up to those high expectations. It's in all the surrounding execution that people quibble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All the people you execute.
It's in the executions.
One last point I wanted to make too is the inclusion in the game is great. Like, there's a lot of representation all around. So that's really good to see.
Cool.
And it's a bummer that you have to call that out. That's a good point. And it's not just given, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, it's good to see. You know, it's one of the most high-profile releases this year, for sure. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't have any other questions about it.
Yeah, excited to see how little you're able to share as you get into the back half.
I'll be curious to hear broadly how the ending lands for you. I said lending ands for you, which is not good. No, so it's not good. So, did you have anything else, Ben?
That's all I got.
Okie doke. Let's see here, David. Let's go to you now.
Yeah, so kind of in a little bit of a zag, Xbox Computer Edition, whatever they call it.
Game Pass thing?
Game Pass thing. Yeah, thank you. Added No Man's Sky, so I decided to give that a shot.
Have you not played it before?
No.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And strangely enough, despite like just, you know, raking it over the coals when it first came out, I actually really enjoy it. You know, I really like the the combination of, I guess, exploration and gameplay they've put together.
Mm-hmm.
I think overall my favorite feature of it is there's, I don't know, Des, maybe you can tell me, is it five alien races?
Yeah, I think it's even expanded since I played it last versus me hopping in. So it was four when I played, but I think there is, they added like anomalies or something like that. So
yeah, so there's anomalies which are just weird, like people whose like heads are like electricity and crap.
Like, so people?
Yeah, yeah.
This is true.
And you've got like capitalist frogs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like Klingons. And
just Klingons. Are those official? Did they license them?
No, but it's
lizard Klingons, maybe. Ah,
yeah. Yeah. And you've got maybe humans. So like your default race are maybe humans, but you're always wearing like a space helmet, so you can't really tell.
Well, I thought you were technically an anomaly.
See,
they talk about you being an anomaly all the time.
Yeah, it's real ambiguous.
We should have named this race anomalies. We get confused now in these situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I told you this would happen.
And then my favorite is just like robot people, which are really entertainingly written. But although actually going with the anomaly thing, the one thing I haven't heard anyone talk about is the fact that depending on the circumstances, the game goes straight Lovecraft on you.
What do you mean?
Mm-hmm. Like I found a planet that was like entirely populated by these giant mechanical balls, which at least some of which it insisted were animals, and you know, some of which it insisted were like plants and things like that. And like all of the animals, when you research them, you can then so basically scan them, it'll tell you their habits, their diet, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, one of the plant life on this planet is just this giant monolith that when you highlight it, it's under diet. It just says in all caps, "The Unfortunate."
Have you been to a planet yet where it's raining blood?
I've not seen that yet. Raining fire, yes. Raining radiation, yes. I haven't seen raining blood yet.
Mm-hmm. That's in there.
Hmm.
Yeah, so like there is a lot of weirdness in this game as well. So I think the favorite way that kind of the different weird alien races and things like that manifested itself in gameplay is that you have to learn each individual race's languages word by word. And I think each race has a vocabulary of like in the neighborhood of 1,000 words.
Yeah, I'd believe that.
Yeah.
And so every time you meet one of these aliens, you can basically ask it to teach you one word. And
then, which, sorry to jump in, I wish they would take that away as something you had to choose. And just when you open up the communication menu, it automatically gives you a word, because you're never not going to ask for a word.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's fun because when you have dialogue with the NPCs, you know, it's just some random nonsense word for any word that you know, isn't, you don't know. And so you have to do a lot of you know, a lot of filling in the gaps. That's most important when it's a thing where you'll say trip a security system, and the instructions for what you need to do to disarm it are in an alien language. So it's also kind of fun because, as far as I can tell, the vocabularies are not directly equivalent. So a significant portion of each race's language are words that are, you know, specific to their culture.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool. Other than that, it has a lot of the things I liked from Subnautica, in terms of, you know, you can eventually get a capital ship, you know, a freighter. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the game becomes much more about kind of projecting your power and, you know, being able to, you know, from that deploy smaller vehicles, you know, those sorts of things, which is really cool. I think probably the weirdest feature that I'm not sure quite works is they do procedural generation for everything. And that includes their descriptions of, like, what is the biome of this planet, or what is the, what is the weather like, that sort of thing. So instead of, you know, there'll be like, there's only, say, like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 biomes, things like that. But there's then, for a given biome, just dozens of names for it, which is kind of random.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. You know, most, I don't know, I'd have to come up with a list, but it's really weird. Like, it can make it a little hard to figure out what it's going on with.
So, like, it's like, you know, using a $10 word when a $1 word would do. And it's like,
exactly.
A nice planet can be nice, or it could be tropical, or it could be hospitable, or it could be that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The other kind of weird thing that seems really important to the storyline, but I'm not quite sure where it's going with, is there's these alien drones called the Sentinels that are present on pretty much every planet. And basically their thing is, if they see you, like, harvesting a resource or killing an animal or, like, generally wrecking up the place, mm-hmm. They'll get angry and attack okay. you.
And, yeah, no, these are the robot cops. These are the ones that yeah. stop you from, yeah.
But they are tuned way down in the latest version of the game.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And I would say, it needs, from a gameplay standpoint, it needs another pass, because it's very much, the problem is that, like, 90% of the time, they're just completely irrelevant. Like, they don't do anything. But on the other hand, if you do get in a fight with them, they'll just spawn indefinitely. And so, like, it basically creates a situation where the only viable way to deal with them is just to cheese them. Just to, like, you know, do whatever you're going to do that's going to piss them off, and then immediately, like, abuse the AI to break line of sight where they're not smart enough to find you. But, you know, from a story standpoint, I don't know, I can't quite figure out where they're going with it. I think the most frustrating thing is I've been in many situations where a predatory animal attacks me, and then the drone gets pissed off when I kill the, animal that's attacking me. So...
Yeah.
There's also, they apparently serve as security for a bunch of the sites you find, which I don't quite get how that works, because they're very explicitly, like, a faction that no one knows where they come from and stuff like that. So I'm not sure how you contract them to be your security guards.
It's in their nature to just want to secure things.
Yeah, yeah. They're in it for the love of the game.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, other than that, do you guys have any questions, any suggestions, anything like that?
You've just reaffirmed my beliefs that the best part of this game was taken from Subnautica.
I just want to share, because I jumped in to play with David for, we probably only, messed around for 20 minutes or so. But the way I had to jump into the game was with a new save, because I think we're in like a different mode or something like that. Like there's survival mode and creative mode.
Yeah.
A dozen others. But so it wound up, he was up on a space station and I just spawned in down on a planet, like, with nothing. Mm-hmm. And so we can talk on comms. I'm like, oh, I'm here. I don't even have my heads up display going yet. So I'm going to mine some resources and get that up. And he's like, yeah, hold on. Let me get my spaceship. I'll jump on down. And I get my visor working and tap, tap, boom, it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the dot pointing to the sky. And I'm like, oh, that must be where the space station is. Like, you can literally look up into the universe and see on the other side of the solar system where David is. And then I see the dot moving and flying from the space station to the planet that I'm on. Mm-hmm. And seamlessly enter atmosphere. I see a speck, it gets bigger, it's a spaceship, and he zooms right over my head and lands on the other side of me. And I don't know if I said this, I'm playing in VR here.
Nice.
That's the version of the game that I have messed around with most recently. And just to watch that happen at full scale in an immersive VR environment, I just started laughing. Like it was a moment of pure joy, just an experience that I could only get through a game like this. Mm-hmm. And just watching a friend, come to hang out by flying over my head in a spaceship is fucking rad. Nice. It was so cool.
Yeah. So something else with that I sort of like, even though I'm not sure there's practical application to it, is the fact that, a lot of the time you're doing hyperspace jumps between places, stuff like that. But, all of them you can, simply fly your ship there, in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of them, it's literally it will show you at all times how long will it take you to get there at your present speed. So fairly often it'll be hours to days. But there definitely have been a couple times where it'll be oh, this is gonna be a 5-10 minute flight, and I've just just done it just because. which is kind of cool. The other thing with the VR that I like is it's real interesting because, Dennis is playing it with the Move controller. I can, to a certain degree, and I guess his movements are reflected in the character model.
Okay.
So I can, to a certain degree, intuit what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I'm assuming, some of the controls for menus are on your arm or something like that.
Yeah, you got a hollow Apple Watch kind of deal.
Oh, cool.
Right. And so that's not the way it looks when you're not in VR, but I could immediately tell because we were getting ready to go somewhere and he's got his forearm up in front of him and with his other hand is kind of, doing pointing gestures, that sort of thing.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
The funniest thing about that is, to run in VR, you just hold down a button. But because I knew David could see my arms, I felt obligated to make a run motion.
Oh, my God. That is really funny.
Because otherwise the image is just me legs, winding away and my arms flat down. At my yeah,
make it look natural.
Anime running.
Yeah. I'm all about immersion.
So there are definitely some really beautiful levels there. There's sometimes just some crazy stuff. I think my favorite is seeing quadruped sort of lion looking things that for some reason the game decides should be bipedal.
Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
have you ridden any of them yet?
I have not. Apparently, you have to bribe them with food.
Yep, not very much.
Okay. I haven't unlocked the cooking stuff yet. I just unlocked. I now have a adorable like tiger gecko companion that is helping me build my base.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I think it's remarkable that you guys, so you guys are playing across platform. I mean, Dennis, you were on PSVR and I mean, David, you were playing it on your PC. I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah. So, it wasn't like a month ago, something like that.
Gotcha.
It's maybe been a little longer than that, but like that was definitely the most recent content update.
Yeah.
Yeah, the VR sounds like a strong sell for the game. Because I cannot play Subnautica with VR because that would be terrifying.
I tried it.
You'd have to hold your breath.
I tried to use it. It doesn't use like motion controllers on Subnautica doesn't. So like you're just kind of using it. You're just using a regular controller and looking around. And that is the that's the version of VR that makes me motion sick. So.
I was gonna say you only should be doing that if you're in a cockpit.
Yes. Yeah. Not controlling a body like you are in Subnautica, yeah. So
which is as a side note, Dennis, what's your view setting? Do you use cockpit view for your craft?
Oh yeah, absolutely cockpit view.
Yeah.
Cockpit and I just realized I've never tried to reach out because on a planet you just reach out and lift a handle to get out. Like you literally lift up the cockpit. I've never tried to do that in space. I wonder what would happen.
I know it is possible to actually exit your vehicle in space. For two things. One, I read something that apparently it is possible to just like if you have enough life support, just manually like hijack resources off of like other ships or something.
That's amazing.
That sounds really awesome.
But the other thing, I don't know if this was a glitch or what, but you can board other freighters and like you know, trade with them, or that's also one of the ways, you know, all the freighters look different, have different stats, that sort of thing. So you can just board it, find the captain, like make them an offer on buying the ship. however, at one point I was on a freighter and it decided to like jump to hyperspace while I was there. And so I ended up just floating in space and like quickly died. So I don't know if that was supposed to be how that works or not.
I was like, we got someone trying to board, but we've already started the sequence. What do you want to do? let him on.
Let's hear him out. Yeah. seems to want to talk to us. So.
In their race, that would be totally feasible to survive in the vacuum of space. So they don't think anything of it.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. They never really explain why it is that like the robots apparently need to breathe oxygen.
Good question.
Don't know. Yeah. Maybe they are some kind of they work on some kind of internal or external combustion, so they require some kind of oxygen in order for it to go.
Confirmed. No Man's Sky steampunk.
As all hell.
It is weird to me the degree to which like a whole bunch of the crafting is like let's recreate high school chemistry. Although it does bother me that like one of the things I'm farming now is like carbon crystals. It's like, you mean diamonds?
Oh man, what they don't want to do, that would probably clang for people to realize that like, oh yeah, like, you know, it just, if you called it carbon crystal, it would be, you know. You're like, well, wait a minute. Like, those are everywhere. It's diamonds. Wait, aren't diamonds valuable? Cubic. Aren't they rare? Yeah.
Cubic zirconium, please.
That's different, though. That's zircon.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. There's. Wow.
Yeah. I need to pay more attention while I'm playing No Man's Sky.
Cool. Anything else besides No Man's Sky, David?
No, that's pretty much it.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So in addition to that brief jaunt in the No Man's Sky universe, we finished playing Minecraft Dungeons this week.
Oh, cool.
By which I mean we beat it on the base difficulty, after which we promptly turned around and started playing it on the next difficulty up.
How was that last boss fight for you?
That was something else.
I still have not beaten the final boss.
It is incredibly dodging focus, and every other boss, you know, to some extent you can stand your ground. However, the final boss deals out so much damage, particularly with some of its, like, it spreads fire on the floor. And if you stand on that for a millisecond, you're dead. So the floor is lava, but, like, you know, how you would actually interact if the floor was lava. It took us a lot of tries. I think there were a couple of nights in there of just kind of going after it and not succeeding. But through kind of really, really taking a slower approach, because if you watch the health bar, it actually has relatively low health compared to other bosses.
Okay.
And that's the interesting thing is, you know, so if you focus on dodging and then just pick your spots to get in an arrow or two and come with a build, kind of focused on range, you can get through it. I don't know to what extent having a second player, have you been playing multiplayer? I forget.
No, I've been playing solo.
Yeah. I don't know how much having a second player to kind of do the one is kiting, one is focusing tactic, how much that helped, because a lot of their attacks are kind of AoE and just like it feels a little bit bullet hell-ish in that final boss fight. But I'm sure it did help. But yeah, I mean, you beat the game and it gives you the fitting like, okay, things are better now, or are they ending? It drops you Diablo style into that nice cycle of, all right, you got the end game level stuff for this difficulty. That'll be just enough to get you started for the next level of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really fun. So, you know, even though we're kind of seeing all the levels for the second and third time, it's stayed fresh. There's a bunch of secrets and unlockables that you literally can't find until you're playing through on the next difficulty level up. And it's gated. Like you have to beat it on the base difficulty before you get the later ones. Which I don't know how I feel about either of those things. That feels a little bit like, you know, if I'm scouring the level on my first time through, reward that, have the secret there versus just artificially pulling it out until I've gone through it a second or third time. And then if I just want to jump in and have a hellishly hard experience, let me do that as well. So those are small gripes, because the time that we are spending with it is ridiculously fun. And I'm more than happy to kind of take the slow road through all the difficulties in sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Minecraft Dungeons.
Mm-hmm. So what's your go-to build?
Yeah, good question. I really like, this is hilarious. It's in the opening cutscene. The Illager, the main villain of the story,
right,
steals
a dumb name.
Yeah.
a lot of Minecraft, like, actual, like, nomenclature is pretty bad, like, outside of, like, you know, creepers, like the fact that they have a Slender Man that they just call the Ender Man is really bad.
Yeah. But he, in the very opening video, he steals an orb of power, which is very obviously a cube, and I nearly fell off the couch laughing.
Okay.
Like, it's perfect.
That's good. I like that.
What made me think of that is there's an orb of something, item that is, it's a, you know, a piercing, ray that shoots out from you on, you know, off the screen. And you have to hold still while you're firing it, and power it with enemy souls, but it can deal out a lot of damage. So I really like that item. But apart from that, the game has done an incredibly good job keeping us just experimenting and having fun using whatever seems good in the moment as stuff drops. I've used pretty much every different weapon type when I've had one that's like the best level for me. And found builds within that are really fun. So probably my favorite so far is I had a warhammer that whenever you strike the ground or, you know, strike with it, it has a gravitational pull to where you impact. And so it winds up grouping all the enemies together for your follow-up attacks. And you just kind of create a nice little spot for you to just wail on. And then the other thing that I loved was a hunter's axe that had an enchantment on it that would debuff enemy damage by 40%. And so you just, you know, my role at that point was to just dash straight into the heart of the mob and start swinging wildly. And by the time, like, I kind of got through them, everyone was debuffed and we could just, you know, pick them off. So yeah, it the gameplay feels meaningfully different when you've got these different weapons and you fill different roles. If one of us has a really overpowered bow, we'll stay back and snipe and just, your approach changes with the weaponry really well. And I don't feel like we found a single right answer. But I don't know, David, if you have settled into a groove of one or the other.
No, I mean, there's a couple I like to play with. You know, I like the summons a lot. Those are kind of fun. The soul builds are a lot of fun, although I usually go with the healing item for that. Probably my favorite is it's like a horn that's just, you know, a AoE knockback focused on yourself.
Yeah.
Which is real useful for, dealing with clusters of enemies, and you can also like knock enemies off of cliffs, which instantly kill them.
Yeah, there's a couple levels that you're like on ramparts and stuff, and so you just constantly have that opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. You know, depending on where you are, the ranged attack shield can just be blatantly broken. So, yeah,
I rolled with that for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a lot of good stuff with it.
Yeah, and I don't think you were on last week when I talked about it, but like it's all the Diablo goodness in a package that Luke and Milo can sit and watch us play, and they will actually start up chants to encourage us if we're having trouble. So
that's really good.
Got a cheering section. Yeah, really, it's fun. But kind of in that theme of game, it's different genres, but the fighting off mobs is the same. I also picked up Dungeon Defenders Awakened. Which, are you guys familiar with Dungeon Defenders?
No.
Is this the remake?
It is, yes. It's a remake of the first game. So there's Dungeon Defenders, Dungeon Defenders 2, and then Dungeon Defenders Awakened, which I guess was kickstarted. But it is a action game style setup where you're controlling your character in third person. There's a crystal in the center of the map, sometimes multiple crystals, and then waves of enemies kind of marching to destroy the crystals. But you're, in addition to, you know, being able to attack with melee and ranged attacks as your character, you also have abilities that you can essentially drop tower defense items. So like a turret that fires harpoons at enemies, or an electrified field that they have to walk through and you can place it on their path. And it's a tower defense game just done in a third person action kind of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So super, super cool. I played a tiny little bit of the first one, but at that point, by the time I came to the game, everyone was like level 600 million and no one wanted to play with a noob. And so I just, I kind of bounced off of it. This time around, reading some posts in the community, still most everyone is level 600 million,
okay.
Particularly because the community complained and wanted to be able to import their Dungeon Defenders 1 save. And the developers wound up deciding to let them do that, which you're laughing for. If you're going to do that, why not just like, why get a new version of the game?
Yeah.
I guess they've added a difficulty level. So there's like, all the, easy, super hard. Nightmare mode was the biggest one in the last game. And then they're like, No, on top of that is now massacre mode. Or that might be reversed. But so that's interesting, but at least it's a newly enough out that there is still I've found people at low level to play with. And you really, really do have to play this with other people. Like the game is balanced around having multiple people in, sheerly from the fact that there are kind of multiple lanes of enemies marching in. And at a certain point, because you can only be in one place at a time, even with setting traps, it's not going to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always left my room open for people to join. And I would say more games than not, someone pops in about halfway through. Now, whether or not they're useful, that's another thing. But it's been fun. And it's one of those low effort games that you don't have to think too hard while you're playing. So I could see it very quickly becoming like a podcast game. I'm still new enough that I'm like, I'm getting my bearings, but, it'll, you know, there's nothing that would stop you from being able to, do that, which is super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My only other thought is that if you are soloing, there is absolutely a wrong answer in that I tried to, play with the monk class. I picked it 'cause it looks like the airbender.
I should say
my kids picked it 'cause it looks like the airbender. and so I was like, oh yeah, you guys like that. We'll play him. And I could not get past the second level, even after several attempts, just kept on stalling out. I switched to another character and had more luck. So I think some are better for solo than others, but the monk is not at all for solo. And David, it sounded like you might've had a thought on that.
Yeah. Just that is not a good call. In particular, it's the only class. Well, it doesn't really have traps. You know, it has auras. So basically it's designed to do a really good job of buffing other people's traps.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you have very little ability to actually, you know, affect the tide of your own.
Yep. And I learned that the hard way.
So what'd you switch to?
I tried a little bit of everything. I think the one character play was the mage or the apprentice, whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm settling on the huntress.
Okay, sure.
Just because the other one is the squire. It's like a knight character that's very tanky, and I've read that it's good for solo. But they're kind of right click ability. They don't have a ranged attack, they have a block. And just, I don't know, blocking is not as fun as shooting bows and arrows or magic missiles or whatever. So I've gravitated towards the huntress.
Skyrim proved.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like the mage. The thing that I got frustrated with is the like optimal way to play it is just super finicky because it has a charge attack. And so there's like an optimal like how much to charge it type of thing. And I don't know, I really dislike finicky controls.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. But I'm early on in it. This is my Father's Day present from Luke and Milo.
Oh, nice.
And again, they I tricked them into buying a game for Jen and I to play. They tricked me into my Father's Day present being something they wanted to watch. So we're square now. Well played.
It's a give and a take.
That's right. This is just a quick hit. I also for Father's Day I got a solid state drive. It's the NVMe format that is like hyper fast.
Yeah.
And guys, I never have to watch an intro video or a loading screen again in my life. It's fantastic. It's so nice. I did not know how much of my life I was wasting.
Yeah, no, it's hard to look back after you have an SSD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So that's me.
Cool. Minecraft Dungeons and Dungeon Defenders Awakened. Dungeon
a lot of dungeon theme. Yeah, it's a dungeon week. You've heard of Shark Week. Next up, Shark Dungeon Week.
Oh, God, not the Shark Dungeon. Oh, man. Let's see here. So for me, I'm going to have to disappoint you guys. Like, I didn't even stream this past weekend because I have been so... I just have a lot of work to do.
Pay dividends next week.
Yeah. So just gonna, you know, I don't really have anything new for this. I have spent most of my gameplay time playing both Hitman 2, which is very good. We're covering that on WoF. We actually just recorded that episode today. And also playing Tactics Ogre, Let Us Clean Together. That is also good, but it is also a very, very long game. Yeah, so all of that on top of other stuff. Man, Hitman 2 is really good. Have you played that, Ben?
Yep.
Gotcha.
That was my entry into the series.
Hitman 2. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I couldn't remember if you had played the first one or if you had played the played that one. Cool. So I don't know. That's my way of ending this segment.
Wait, how did you murder the Italian dude in the first level?
The Italian dude in the first level.
Who's playing golf?
Oh, yeah.
What?
And Hitman 2?
Hitman 2. Wait a minute. So I'm talking about Hitman 2, the one that came out in 2018. Not Hitman 2. Silent Assassin. Yeah, okay. No, I'm talking about the sequel to Hitman 2016. There we go.
But all the wacky nomenclature of reboots.
That's the one with the golf.
Is it?
Yeah, where you can replace his golf ball with an explosive golf ball, which is the only correct answer to this question.
I don't remember like the target in the first one. Are you talking about the mansion on the beach in New Zealand?
I don't think it's that. It's like an Italian villa sort of thing. Yeah. There's like a kitchen entryway.
Oh, no, you guys are talking about Hitman 2016. Yeah.
I'm talking about Silent Assassin.
Oh, okay.
Way back one.
Okay, yeah, so you're talking about Hitman 2.
Hitman really hates golfers that live in Italy.
Yeah, huh. No, because, that absolutely is something you can do in the Sapienza level in Hitman 2016. Yeah, no, just, blah. Lots of unclear nomenclature. But, I mean, on that guy, when I in Hitman 2016, I did use the exploding golf ball because why not?
I feel like this is a Hitman 2 is a game that they greatly have outsmarted themselves.
How so?
In that repeatedly and as recently as like right before we recorded today, I have gone in to like buy the game and not been able to figure out how to buy the game.
Okay.
Just like I honestly can't figure out. There's like Hitman Free Edition and then like Hitman Plus Good Edition. And...
yeah. Let me see here one second because I think I might have you. I can just. Would you play it on PC?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a copy of it just waiting around. Ooh. Yeah, I can just send that to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I'll figure it out. Yeah, that's definitely not the level that I have played. So, Ben just shared us being
Hitman.
Shot.
We'll see which one it is.
He's actually sending a hitman after me.
Yes. Yeah.
He is quite
displeased. quite displeased as regards the lack of clarity. Yeah.
So, question: is this the game? The most recent one, the one that has like players can create their own scenarios and that sort of thing.
Yeah, this is part of the same series that has that.
Okay. Yeah, one of my weird like guilty streaming pleasures is watching people stream that to a significant degree just because I love reading like I guess when you do that you can type in a mission briefing.
Uh-huh.
And so like the different justifications people come up with to like frame the scenario.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just now seeing the message you sent Ben about you should just stream playing Hitman. I really ought to. It'd be really fun. I did it once for some event that we did in the past, maybe for Duck Spring back when we did that. Yeah.
I sent you that over the weekend when you were playing it.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be fun to stream a little bit more of that because what I want is a way to play more of it because it's very good. However, I cannot do anything if it is not for content. So,
well, I think it's also a good game that for community to watch and then throw out suggestions like, "Hey, kill that baker," and it's like, "All right,
yeah, here I'll throw a fire extinguisher at that guy. No big deal." Check your private messages on Slack, David.
Thank you.
No, it was part of a recent humble choice thing, and I already had a copy from a while back. So, yeah. Okay, I think that's my segment.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I had some AI on the brain, and you know, usually if people are doing AI in a game well, you kind of forget that it's there. It just blends into the experience. However, some of the most memorable moments in gaming that I can think of come when the AI does something just outlandish or stupid or funny. And that's what we're talking about tonight. So when have you, what's the funniest or most outlandish thing you've seen an AI do in a game?
Yeah, and the image for this is a GIF of somebody cheesing the Dragon Rider boss fight in Dark Souls 2. Just a very good and very predictable way to get a lot of souls in the early game of that. Yeah.
Although, I feel like, to be fair, I've done the exact same thing that enemy has done of, like, have a heavy weapon in Dark Souls and overcommit off a ledge.
Oh, it can happen to anybody, but it's nice that the rules work for him too. And I also love that they never patch that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite on that was Dark Souls 3, where enemies just straight up couldn't use ladders. And if you climbed on a ladder, they would just walk off the edge trying to get you.
They thought they were Leon from Resident Evil 4. No.
Or Samuel L. Jackson's character from the beginning of The Other Guys.
Let's see here. So I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, my favorite example of bad AI design is an old school arcade game and home games, where if you die, the game respawns you in the same spot. They can result in you losing all of your lives in a matter of seconds, because you cannot escape. Better games either waited before bringing you back or spawned you elsewhere. Yeah, that's less bad AI. That's more just like really bad design that didn't like think through getting you in a loop. Yeah.
In this instance, you are the loot cave.
Oh, man. I like the idea. I like the idea of them farming you. Ooh, I don't want to be farmed.
what did you think Farming Simulator was?
Oh, geez. I thought it looked like a fun and relaxing game. Oh, no. let's see. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, my favorite bit of dodgy AI is from Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered, where sometimes your squad mates will pick up a grenade that's been thrown at them and just hold it till it explodes. It's one of the funniest things to watch. Special mention to Master of Orion 2, where sometimes your closest enemy will elect you ruler of the galaxy if you open peace talks close to the same time as the election. It's almost hilarious to see a race with 60% control of the galaxy vote for you. Also, I feel like ruler of the galaxy and democratically elected don't quite go together.
You only need to win once.
Yeah. Oh, please don't say that.
Yeah, no. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Too real. Too real.
No, I like the idea from Call of Duty that they pick up the grenade and then start reenacting Monty Python.
Oh, geez, man. Master of Orion 2 is a really fun game. We did that for WoF, and I put it down. Although I guess it's kind of obviated by Stellaris now. Anyway, Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, my favorite example of AI messing up is Civilization 2's Mega Angry Gandhi.
His anger is measured in megatons.
Like, there's an actual reason that they did that, too. Like, so there's an explanation for how it happened, which is basically, like, it was almost something as trivial as they replaced, they mistyped a greater than sign than a less than sign, but it immediately made him as aggressive as possible, and it became such a meme that overly aggressive Gandhi, who nukes everybody, ended up just being the default behavior for India in every single one of them.
I mean, people would protest if it was.
Right. No, like you don't mess with classics, you know, especially not 30 years later. Yeah.
I'm going to go on a hunger strike until we can nuke another country.
Jeez.
Oh, don't worry. It's, you know, looking like India and China might help you out with that.
Oh, God. We do this show to escape reality, not get pulled back into it.
There's just so much to be fucking anxious about.
So on our team, we have two people from India and two people from China, too. So we have it'll be interesting to see what happens if tensions rise even more.
Huh. I'm going to stop thinking about conflicts between nuclear powers right now. And I'm going to say, hey, Dennis, what does David say?
Yeah, David Paxton says the fight against Marak, the final boss in Skyrim's Dragonborn DLC, comes to mind. You go through this whole dungeon building him up. However, when I finally encountered him, he endlessly flew around the map midway through the fight, and there was no way to attack him. Oh, no. I ended up having to reload a save, go back through half the dungeon, and then fight as it should have, I think. I thought it was bizarre in the moment, and then remembered I was playing a Bethesda game.
Of course.
Yeah, it happens. Bethesda happens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just impressed that someone actually made it to the end of a Elder Scrolls game.
I've beaten at least two Elder Scrolls games.
I didn't know we were on the line with a legend.
That's not a brag.
Please, he prefers Dragonborn.
Dennis, the nicest person on the podcast, lashing out a cold.
Just boom, laying down some ruckus. Okay, I see how it is. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Something happens when you have your third kid. Stop taking shit.
Oh, man.
I ported one over from Slack.
You recorded what?
I said I ported one over from Slack just now.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, I will hit that before we go into ours. Thank you for letting me know as it refreshes. Yeah, there's no reason Facebook should take that long to go. So Nicholas writes, one time I was playing Deus Ex Mankind Divided, and while a security guard was literally right in front of me and looking me right in the eye, a prompt appeared to open up the door to the restricted area right behind them. I hit the prompt, the door opened, the security guard became suspicious and promptly ignored me and assumed whatever disturbance was... they probably ignored me and assumed whatever disturbance was behind the door. I proceeded to sneak in with the front door literally wide open. Yeah, I love that. I really like that.
So the only thing worse would be if you pretended to throw a ball down the hallway when the door opened. Guard reached after it. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So just because I have Hitman on the brain, like... A lot of this is either the AI working as intended, or it is just kind of like a time where, you know, the system is not necessarily a perfect simulation of realistic behavior, but it leads to very funny circumstances. So like, you know, the fact that when somebody sees a dead body, like somebody who is very clearly dead, their instinct is to run toward it, not away from it, seems very curious to me. So just the way that you can use a dead body to lure more people in to kill them and add to the pile is very, very funny to me. Similarly, and this is just kind of like a good mechanic that they built in, but in one of the DLC levels for Hitman 2, it takes place inside. You're inside of a bank. And one thing that they add are wet floor signs, which if you're dressed up as a janitor, you can just pick up without anybody noticing. So you go and pick up this sign, and like people will walk by and slip and either knock themselves out or kill themselves by falling and hitting their heads. But like, you know, the emergent play of like, okay, I pick up the wet floor sign and then I throw a coin across the puddle, and like a security guard says, "Ooh, coin," and goes running and slips and breaks themselves. It's like completely unrealistic behavior, but incredibly funny.
I was gonna say, can you place it back down someone else to keep someone from chasing you?
I don't know that you can create a water hazard and then use it to like, you know, change pathing, but like, yeah, I think that it just exists like four puddles that are already in the environment where somebody has been cleaning or something like that. And, you know, by taking it away, you create the hazard.
I like the idea of I would chase him through the door, but the sign says there's a wet floor there. So
right. And also nobody thinks to just like walk carefully, which is what you ought to do if you can't get around it. Yeah. Oh, geez. So that's mine. David, how about you?
I think my favorite is one of the areas in Assassin's Creed Greece this time.
Odyssey.
Yes, Odyssey. Is this like enemy encampment, Spartan encampment, that's just on the top of this massive cliff. And so I cleared out the entire thing. Actually, kind of similar to what you said with Hitman, except it was like luring people to the edge and then, you know, like throwing throwing a coin or something, or I guess whatever you throw, near the edge of the cliff. Like someone comes over and looks and just running up and like kicking them just over and over again.
That's funny. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to go with an old school answer and say 007 GoldenEye. The way that the bad guys would like jump and then slowly stylize, like point a gun at you and then shoot at you. Yeah. It's pretty entertaining.
Yeah. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I mean, Dark Souls is full of these, but Demon Souls, the Flame Lurker, and you could get him stuck behind the spine, I think it is.
In the rib cage, yeah.
This massive beast that is just kind of running towards you, stuck on a tiny little bump in the ground, is the epitome of the "we can't go that way because there's a trash bag" logic of video games. That's less than AI, I think. I guess, you know, the pathing there. My favorite, though, and I've had this experience both in Assassin's Creed and in Shadow of Mordor, is you'll get surrounded by grunts who are going to attack you. Batman Arkham Asylum as well. Basically anything with the tap square combat system.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm waiting for one to attack so I can use my counter, and that, you know, starts a chain of death. But whatever trigger gets one of the guys to finally step forward doesn't happen. And you just wind up with this huge mob around you all swirling, but everyone's like, no, you go first. Like, you know, everyone's just waiting for someone to make the first move.
Yeah, I think
you knocked out Colin.
So I think what it is with that in particular, where I noticed it was you eventually get challenges that are like, counter people while you're on fire. So you know, it'll be something that's, you know, difficult to set up, so you have to set up the situation that's like, all right, attack me. But yeah, I think on that, yeah, it's very much much designed around, it looks realistic as long as you're trying to be somewhat aggressive.
Right.
Yeah, it assumes offense in a way
but it falls down the second you start trying to preserve your, you know, well-being.
Right. Yeah. There's similar things in like Warframe. There's a maximum number of enemies that are allowed attacking you at once. So there can be more enemies than that on screen, but if you really pay attention, you'll notice that most of them aren't actually firing on you.
They're just holding up the gun and screaming, blam, blam, blam.
Yeah. Or like River City, what is it, World or whatever. There was, I think it was like only one or two enemies were basically actively being controlled by the AI at a time. So you could literally very quickly learn to watch like which enemies could conceivably attack you and just ignore everyone else.
That's good.
Yeah. Do you guys want the actual explanation for why Gandhi is an asshole in Civ? So this this is from a Kotaku description here. So in the original civilization, every leader had an aggression score. And Gandhi's was set to be one, and it was, you know, very stable, you know, to, you know, because that's, you know, Gandhi, you know, kind of like the thing about him. Mm-hmm. but it was an 8-bit unsigned integer. Whenever you as a as a leader in civilization switched over to democracy, everybody else would have their aggression reduced by 2. So what that meant was it would cycle all the way back around to 255, making it as aggressive as possible. So you adopt democracy and Gandhi flies off the fucking rails. Yeah.
And he's wearing sandals. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Look, democracy, the world is at peace, and Gandhi gets bored. He's got nothing to fight for anymore.
Yeah. And they kept it, you know, it was not as extreme in later games, but they kind of make it possible to work him into just a fit of fury later on, easier than you would expect. So it is as stupid as, you know, greater than, less than error. You know, it's literally just, oh shit, we overflowed the variable and we didn't take that into account. Fuck. Yeah. Thank you everybody for writing in. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for putting this one up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Dennis, question, what is Mixer? And two, what happened to Mixer?
Yeah, well, I think part of the problem, what the hell Mixer? Despite them investing gobs and gobs of money in buying talent off of Twitch.
Yeah, getting exclusive deals and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like I remember we talked about that when it went down, and I think we kind of all agreed this is what was going to happen. So Mixer was Microsoft's Twitch competitor. They went and bought Ninja and a bunch of other content creators with big names, paid them gobs of money to stream on Mixer exclusively, and then promptly folded. So... it says that the content creators aren't obligation for where they go next, but apparently Mixer is getting folded into Facebook,
which is fraught
for godly reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess they're hoping that people will follow. But I doubt that Mixer has done enough to build up the goodwill to get people to stay in the, I mean, it's like 6 months or something that they've existed. Or been kind of doing the pursue talent strategy that sunk them. So yeah, it's just it's really interesting to me, the world of streaming platforms, and the fact that, especially with the pandemic, you know, streaming games is mainstream content now, pun intended, but esports in particular. And it's just so weird to see everyone fumble around and try to figure out like what model to mirror to make it successful. Like, is this a TV thing? Is this a franchise thing? Is this a, you know, do we go buy talent? Like, you know, and the truth is that it doesn't really fit any existing models. And it's going to take something just that looks completely different, but clearly Mixer wasn't that.
It's really hard to feel like bad about this. Like, you know, I hope that people who are on this project just get reassigned to a different place, you know, like, but like, you know, you think, okay, this is a market that is already really saturated by two of the biggest companies ever. You know, you have Amazon with, you know, with Twitch, and you've got YouTube with Google or Alphabet or whatever. And you think, okay, like, yeah, how do you break into a market that already has all that? You think, oh yeah, Mixer had Microsoft behind it. That's still a huge company. And you know, I'm a person who streams, but like, I never saw like a compelling pitch as to like why Mixer would be good from a creation standpoint, or why Mixer would be good, you know, appreciably better than the other stuff for the audience. Like, oh, if it'll make stuff better for the audience, I would go there. But I just they never made an actual case for it.
And that's the problem. Oh, go ahead.
The compelling case is if you're the best streamer ever, they give you trucks of money.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody benefits.
But I mean, this is the problem with these giant corporations kind of pushing around and being the drivers of innovation in the market is they can all afford to get into the streaming space without actually doing anything to deserve to be there. Yeah. And then they can flounder around and push out anyone that might actually move the needle before eventually folding. And like you said, hopefully just reassigning people. But, you know, it really kind of sucks to see, you know, even though it's not like technically monopolized or whatever, just with such large players throwing their weight around, it really stifles anything happening because, again, they can all afford to get in and push other people out without actually justifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's, rent seeking behavior. Welcome to neo-feudalism.
Yep. The future's not going to get better.
We got David. A bunch of uppers just peppered throughout this episode.
something that I have seen is that Mixer has really given their creators the short end of the stick. Like, okay, we're shutting this down. Like, you have a month to archive all of your video on demand. That is held back there, which is not a lot of time. Like, if you were prolific at all, downloading all of that and finding a way to store it, et cetera, on a personal system is, it's a tough putt. So like people are, you know, like I've seen tweets of like, yeah, there are creators who are just like crying on stream because like their entire audience, like everything they do is here and it's going away and they're
because they were investing so many millions of dollars. How could it go away?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Nothing Microsoft ever develops goes away. man, it sucks. Just building all these livelihoods on services and companies that are just not going to be there. Mm. Mm. I didn't mean to turn into a huge bummer there, but I don't know, just kind of who I am. So
I'm going to go back to my happy environment of The Last of Us 2 after this podcast.
I've got some excitement. I'm going to move on to mine here. Do we have any other comments about Mixer?
No.
Okay.
Don't name your streaming service something that sounds like a hookup service.
Life lessons. So I've got something that I'm pretty excited about. So over the weekend, the group, I'm not even sure what to call them, but the group that kind of is broadly organized into the name Haunted PS1, they put on a really, really good 1 hour like E3 like trailer reveal press conference. They called it EEK3. And it was an hour long show with really high production values showing trailers for just a shitload. I mean, like 40 plus indie horror games that all kind of match the lo-fi indie horror stuff, you know, the Haunted PS1 demo disc that I talked about, the Dread X collection, any of those. Like, it's just a whole bunch of developers, you know, working on either Itch or Steam, etc. Saying like, hey, here's stuff that's coming up, here's stuff that has demos out now, here are things that are actually like out, like go and grab all these. And boy, I was just following along and making notes and tweeting out about really cool stuff that was being featured. And it is a really exciting time to be into indie horror games that this whole thing was, you know, put together and went off without a hitch. And like, it was kind of stacked front to back with bangers. So
that's awesome.
I'm really into it.
Just like Duckfest this weekend, right, Cole?
Yeah, exactly. starting at 3 p.m. on Saturday.
Saturday
and Sunday. Nitro burning funny cars. They put out on Itch a virtual show floor, which I intended to play before I hopped on here just so I could talk about it. But like, it's a little, you know, environment that you can walk around in and will launch, you know, some demos of different things. And the, you know, the virtual show floor is, you know, supposed to be a you know, horror game in and of itself too. And like, that's just available for free. Like if you just search Haunted PS1 on itch.io. Yeah, I'm super jazzed about this. I'm going to be harvesting this for games to stream and play and talk about here for a good long while. Additionally, like it was a relatively small crowd who was watching it. I wish more people had seen it, but like the chat was all like the developers who made stuff and like their fans and people who were working in their own stuff. Like it was a really cool environment. So yeah, Haunted PS1 and Eek 3. Like I hope that they do this again next year because this ruled.
Nice. It takes me back to the conversation we had on The Last of Us 2 about like all these art assets that were super bespoke and niche and just how much ungodly effort has to go into that. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool that the kind of indie horror game scene has collectively decided, you know, PS1 is about as far as we need to go. And, well, and like, it's true. That is as far as they need to go. And as long as everyone, like, it is cool. So
And the PS1 was an important era for horror as well. Like, yeah. So something else cool about this, like there are people who are like developing and making dev tools for making more games like this. So they were like doing some like tech demos of basically a whole engine that was built to make games that looked convincingly lo-fi, because making things look old in the correct way is actually really, really hard. See our conversation about a short hike a while back, you know, about that pixel filter not necessarily working that great. Yeah.
Super cool.
I love it. This happened on, June the 20th. If you go back on Twitter, I had like a little tweet thread where I was reacting to all the stuff happening in real time. And even some of the developers like reached out and said, hey, there's, you know, the demos available here and stuff. So really enthused about this community.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see, David, what's happening with the FDA?
Yeah, so the FDA has approved the first prescription video game. In this case, it's a game called Endeavor RX that is designed to treat ADHD in children between 8 and 12. Apparently they've the company has been doing clinical trials of the game for, I'm missing it here, but I think they said 7 years, although be fair, it has all been in-house. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of honestly the basics of it. I looked at, they've got a trailer for the game itself. As far as I can tell, kind of the snarky like hot take on this is ADHD training equals bullet hell shooter.
Okay.
Like, which I guess sort of makes sense. Like, stay focused and dodge all the things.
Maybe. I don't know how that would... I mean, I could just see getting frustrated and wanting to play something else.
Like, yeah, I think they did rate the two like side effects were frustration and headaches.
Huh. Yeah, I'd be curious like to see a talk about the science and rationale behind this. I don't feel one way or the other about how plausible this is, but I would like to see them
talking about it.
Yeah. Just saying like, hey, like here's cause and effect in this. Yeah.
I feel like this would be, I feel like making a game like this would be very tough because, you know, if you think about it, like you're going to have a 7 year lag, between, you know, or however many years, you know, any game you make at coming to market, think about like what were games like 7 years ago.
The Last of Us instead of The Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And Grand Theft Auto 5 was, oh, never mind.
You know, like, I think there could be a significant problem, you know, keeping up with the market. you know, it seems to me that most of the like well-remembered educational games I can think of were kind of ones that just happened to hit on sort of being timeless.
Math Blaster.
Yep.
It's interesting. So from they only show really one or two clips of the actual gameplay in the trailer. And from what I can tell, it's just a little dodge-em, you know, racing forward game, but they'll randomly send like bright colored flashing objects across the screen.
Hmm.
So, like you said, Cole, I'd be interested to know more about exactly what kind of went into the thinking behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also kind of wonder, you know, how this relates to like, you know, just teaching people meditation or something.
Yeah.
Mm.
Don't know. Yeah. Let's hear anything else about that.
Nope. That's what I got.
Okay. And Ben, hit us with the bummer.
To punctuate some more bad news onto the show. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think it's that bad of a story. I think people on the internet are overreacting a bit.
It's a 2-month delay on a game. Yeah, there are already so many games to play.
Yep. Yeah. So Cyberpunk 2077 is delayed from September to November. Me and Cole are probably excited about it because that's closer to our birthdays.
This
so
is true.
It's happy birthday us. yeah. They said in a press release, the reason why they're delaying it is they need to fix bouncing on the game and still fix bugs on the game. So I'm perfectly fine with them taking time to do that.
Yeah.
Very much of the philosophy, I'd rather wait, you know, a month or a year for a really good game.
Yeah.
Than to just have a Borderlands 3 situation or, I don't know, choose your pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, people on the internet hated this. It was the end of the world. People were lumping this in with other stories in 2020 of like, oh, what? This is the worst year. Yeah. Just like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah, dog.
Yeah. Nah, sorry. That ain't it. That's a wow.
Grasping for any straw of hope in this year, and now even that's taken away. I can understand it. Don't condone it, but I can understand it.
Oh, yeah. I can, like, you know, I can understand, like, anything being the straw that breaks the camel's back for somebody just like, ah, geez, man. Like, I was just, man, I didn't need just one more thing. But to then go online and make a big deal about it seems like a bit much to me.
there are people whose entire lives are online and make a deal out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of the thing that happens. So,
I think what they need to do is, man, what I remember, you guys remember Spore? Will Wright's Spore?
Yeah, yeah.
Will Wright tries not to, too.
Release the character creator as a standalone thing. I need to get my Cyberdon customization on stat, and that'll tie me over to me. So just give me that part of the game. I just want to see the options. Mm-hmm. I want to see.
Yeah, put it out there. Get people excited about the customization. I can see
that. Get the Rule 34 going early.
Yeah, why not? Oh, well. Lots of cool stuff coming out anyway. So all of us have way too many things to play. Cool. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to this level number 334. We appreciate you taking the time. As we said at the beginning, Duckfest is this weekend, so that'll be on twitch.tv/duckfeedtv. Go to duckfeed.tv/duckfest to see details about the proceedings. We are going to be going live at 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, doing something cool, talking about a bunch of different games, actually. We've got other stuff, other shows that are going to be here. We've got guest shows. So we've got, Topic Lords, the show, the general chat show hosted by Jim, the creator of Frog Fractions. There is going to be here. That's on Saturday, I believe. And then on Sunday, we've got Monster of the Week, Jeremy Greer's Supernatural podcast, which will be fun. It'll be a good time. Yeah. Otherwise, for this show, you know the things that you can do. You can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can leave us ratings or reviews, and you can tell your friends about the show. Dennis, do you have anything to promote for Deck of Wonders?
No, I expect by the time you're listening to this that the Kickstarter preview page will be live. And I guarantee you, if you go to any of the socials for Deck of Wonders, they will be pointing to it. Cool. So you can't pledge yet, can't actually go on it yet, but you can sign up to be alerted when it does go live.
Awesome.
And I will take that spread as far and wide as possible. So check it out if it's your bag. If you know someone who you think a solo expandable card game mm-hmm. would be their bag, pass it along. And yeah, I will take all the support I can get.
Nice. Cool. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets on Twitter at Cole Ross, KOLERoss.
Been Dennis Furia. And as I just said, Deck of Wonders, Instagram and Facebook. Just on Twitter, you got to put underscores between the words.
Mm-hmm.
My name's David Mysmith, and I think I'm just going to create a pillow for it and not come out.
Sounds like a wise plan to me.
And I've been Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has titles?
I've got two.
Okay.
I have Diegetic QuickTime.
Okay.
From The Last of Us 2 Conversation. And then I have Shark Dungeon Week.
I have, oh God, not the Shark Dungeon. are you guys fine? Which
merge,
which style?
Yeah, I like
good.
Maybe
I
even just not the Shark Dungeon.
What's that?
I just have Shark Dungeon.
Okay.
So we should let David decide.
Yeah.
What variant of Shark Dungeon did you have?
I'm a conscientious objector.
Okay. All right.
None of us wrote it down exactly.
What's that you kind of cut out there?
I said I did not write it down this way, but not the Shark Dungeon would be good.
Okay. All right.
I'm fine with any Shark Dungeon iteration. Or another title, if there's another
one. So Diegetic QuickTime and not the Shark Dungeon or some variant thereof. Is that all you had, Dennis?
Mm-hmm.
Ben, how about you?
I just have Shark Dungeon.
Okay. Let's see, David?
I had nothing.
Okay, there's always one. So I had I had Shark Dungeon. I also had Xbox Computer Edition. So by the votes, it is some variant on Shark Dungeon.
The Shark Dungeons have it.
Yeah. I'll take a look at recent titles and see what length they'll fit in best with those. How's that sound? All right.
Like it.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go.
Good hanging out, guys.
Yeah.
Excited to hang out on Saturday.
Yep.
I've got to quickly play and beat two games.
Oh, you don't need to beat it. Like all we're doing is playing enough to chat about it generally. So
first impressions it.
Yeah.
What are you playing, Ben?
I'm going to do Observer.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you're going to, what's the other game you were going to play and finish?
Wait, me? Oh, Last of Us Part 2.
Oh, okay.
That's a race against the internet.
Gotcha. Yes.
Mm-hmm.